heard from the community that it was important for us to audit city shelters in light of the mayor's new initiatives to address homelessness. With more than 6,000 people experiencing homelessness in Denver, it is critical for the city programs to serve them effectively.
The Department of Housing Stability oversees a variety of Denver's homeless shelters. It funds and monitors the providers that operate shelters. Our audit found risks involving the department's expenses, security, non-discrimination policies, and information protection practices related to shelters. Housing Stability agreed with all but one of our recommendations to address these weaknesses.
Given the size and scope of our audits, it is important to note this audit did not include emergency shelters temporarily serving the influx of migrants arriving in Denver since December 2022.
Our auditors found that Housing Stability does not adequately ensure safety at shelters. The city contracted with the Salvation Army to operate a shelter at a former hotel and provided them with a security budget of more than $800,000. Months later, the Salvation Army had not yet hired a contractor to manage a security presence at the property. Sadly, two guests were shot and killed. Another guest was shot weeks later. These incidents likely traumatized shelter guests and could have affected the engagement and morale of shelter staff.
Our audit also found flaws with reporting expenses. Housing Stability was unable to provide documentation identifying overall shelter-related spending between January 2022 and March 2024. Based on our review of invoices, we estimated the department spent nearly $150 million in this period. Also, we found Housing Stability started a policy to not require shelters to provide meaningful documentation for reimbursements.
In reviewing the new guidance, we found it did not comply with city rules on supporting documentation, such as requiring original receipts or credit card statements to reimburse costs for goods and services.
The department disagreed with our recommendation to end their cost reimbursement policy. Issuing reimbursements without evidence puts the city at risk of fraud, waste, and abuse.
Our auditors also found lax protection of sensitive information and issues involving non-discrimination policies. Sensitive, confidential data of housing guests was left unprotected in a shared drive that staff in other city agencies could access. Separately, our auditors found the Salvation Army's employee handbook conflicts with the contract with the city. The handbook says the Salvation Army will follow non-discrimination law unless it goes against their religious practice.
To say an agency is going to follow the law, except for when it's different from their religious practices, is unacceptable. An agency's handbook does not supersede the terms of an agreed-upon contract. The Department of Housing Stability plays a critical role in addressing homelessness in Denver. As part of our regular audit process, we will conduct a follow-up to see if and how Housing Stability responds to our audit recommendations. The audit report is available at denverauditor.org. Well, that's it for this episode of Ask the Auditor. If you have a question, submit it to auditor@denvergov.org, and maybe your question will be the next question we ask on the next episode of Ask the Auditor.
The challenges our planet's animals are facing sometimes feel a bit heavy.
The animals haven't eaten in a day, 2 days, they haven't drank anything. They're cold, they're dehydrated.
But remember, there's good happening right now. At home.
All right, we were able to get into your unit and we have all four of your cats. So,
okay.
And around the world for any animal, any disaster. Search ifa.org/disaster-ready.
You know, a lot of people say when you're going somewhere, you don't want to look back. But I beg to differ. I can't lie and say it was easy. I looked at everything in a different light. I realized it started with me going back and getting my high school diploma.
Welcome back to this weekly meeting of the Community Planning and Housing Committee with Denver City Council. Your Community Planning and Housing Committee starts now.
Good afternoon. Today is October 7th, 2025. We are on Tuesday. My name is Diana Romero Campbell, and I am the councilperson from Southeast Denver District 4. And I will be chairing our committee today for community planning and housing. Let's go ahead and start with council introductions.
Good afternoon, Amanda Sawyer, District 5.
Good afternoon, Amanda Sandler, Northwest Denver District 1.
Flora Libres, Lucky District 7. Thanks for being here.
Great. And then I think I'm just going to turn it over to you because we get a great overview and update today for the Denver Permitting Office.
All right. Well, I'll start. Thank you so much for having us. Jill Jennings, Golick, Director of the Denver Permitting Office. And we just go around.
Good morning, Chris. No, afternoon. Good afternoon. Chris Gleisner, Community Planning and Development, our Director for Site Design and Neighborhood Development.
Emily Collins, Affordable Housing Supervisor within CPD.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Robert Peek, our Director of Development Systems Performance with the Denver Permitting Office.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kaylee Hill. I'm a project champion for the Affordable Housing Review Team.
Great. Well, thank you for having us today. I will note we have a number of our other departmental partners in the audience and available for questions if you have them. It is hard to believe, as I've joked, this has been the fastest summer fall of what feels like my life. I was last here in April after the mayor announced the executive order. So here today to provide some updates to you all on what we've been working on, talk about some key initiatives, and then we'll in the afternoon presentation on the Proposition 123 fast track process. So just as a quick reminder, especially for those at home. So the Denver Permitting Office was created by Executive Order 151. It is an office within the Office of the Mayor. The executive order outlines certain specific key commitments. There's an attached memorandum outlining roles and responsibilities of the Denver Permitting Office, as well as permitting staff within the departments. And it applies to all city employees whose duties directly relate to or are integral to development and construction permitting processes for development on private property and any associated public improvements that may be required. The executive order was effective on May 14th of this year, and you can see here all of the departments that are engaged and working with us on the Denver Permitting Office. And just as a note, the Denver Permitting Office, as a mayor, as part of the mayor's office, does not have its own line item budget. So I know that did come up in some of the budget hearings last week. So really quick, what is the permitting office? We are the centralized office responsible for alignment, accountability, and coordination within the permitting processes. Our mission is to ensure that we have a permitting process that is efficient, consistent, and timely. And so we work with all of our departmental partners to ensure we are delivering that for our citizens and customers. So I'm going to turn it over to Chris real quick to talk about one of the initiatives we launched this summer.
So speaking of timely, we spend a lot of time listening to our customers in terms of what they need, as well as listening to our staff in terms of the ideas that they generate in terms of how to make our process better, how to make the work that we do more effective to really achieve outcomes and results for the for our development community. What this one specifically is, was launching an effort called our one and done concept review process. The concept review is the first phase in the site development plan review process. It often would go through multiple rounds of review before a customer would be able to actually move to the application phase for the formal site development plan. Hearing from customers that this was sometimes seen as a challenge or a hurdle, that there was some gray area in terms of them being able to understand expectations to be successful in that phase, we did a sort of staff-led process innovation in the fall of last year, where we brought all of our impacted agencies together to really brainstorm what we as a city could do to help sort of unlock this piece of the puzzle. So that it was really exciting. We had a lot of really engaged team members members and actually launched the change this summer in July. But what it did was reposition the concept phase as more of a report of findings and direction to our customers than utilizing that phase of the development review process for compliance, right? So if you come in and ask as an applicant or as a customer, hey, is this something I can achieve? We talk a lot about what it is that you're showing us, but also further develop the pathways that you need to show compliance with those standards rather than looking for compliance, because that happens at a later phase. What it means is those concepts get released to the formal phase of SDP after one round, and we've seen a 2.5 cycle reduction in terms of our data and metrics for what our customers are experiencing. So they're getting to applications much faster than in the previous system. But to be clear, our customers, they do sometimes want to stay in that concept phase to further explore a project, right? So instead of the city being in the position that we hold them in, our customers now are in the position of power where they can ask to stay in that concept phase to further develop and refine, or they can move to the actual formal application phase where they are looking to seek compliance and seek final approvals. So it's been well received by our customers and our staff, and has definitely driven improved results in terms of our metrics.
All right, I'm next going to talk through, myself and Robert, a number of the items that the executive order required that we complete. And so the first is talking about our 180 calendar days of city review time, as well as the refund policy. So we have documented when the city clock starts and stops for each of the record types we are tracking to track that 180 calendar days. We have a dashboard that is internal facing right now that is tracking city time, customer time, joint time, so that we can see and track record types across. Any project that was in prior to the executive order effective date on May 14th, that city time clock starts started on May 14th if they had an open review, or anytime they made a resubmittal after that executive order effective date, that city time started counting. We are looking at total time though, so we can see how long has it been in city's hands prior to that, and are trying to tag projects for our departmental partners that may have been in for a while to see what can be done to resolve that. So the record types we are tracking are any log record for a building permit submittal, a sewer use and drainage permit submittal, or a zoning permit submittal. That all happens on what we call a log record. Formal site development plans, zone lot amendments, and then documents associated typically with our site development plans, those transportation engineering plans, transportation demand management plans, storm and sanitary plan review records, as well as erosion control. So that is all those that we are tracking for 180-day compliance. In working with our partners, we have developed specific intervention points so that we can intervene in a project if exceeding certain thresholds based on sort of review time. We're also looking at number of resubmittal cycles so that we can try to prevent projects from hitting that 180 calendar days of city review time. And so those are 90, 120 days, and 150 days. And so again, that's where we will flag a record for a team to try to see what's outstanding, what needs to be done. What can we assist with to get this project ideally approved? In the instances that we cannot, and we hit that 180 days or exceed it, we have a refund policy that outlines the fees that are eligible for the refund and the process by which we will issue that refund. The applicable fees, and I think I had talked about this last time I was here, are related to what our customers pay and then the relevant record or process that exceeded that time frame. So for a site development plan, you pay a $500 application fee if it's a 1 acre or smaller project. So that would be the amount that we would refund. Projects that are larger than 1 acre have different fees based on the size of the site. And so the max refund we would do is up to $5,000, but again, based on what the applicant paid. And then on the building permit side, so if it was the permit review record that extended that 180 days, it's based on their plan review application fees, and it's up to 5% of that building permit plan review fee paid, but again, no more than $5,000. So let me talk about how the process works, which we have not yet hit, but just are preparing for if it happens. So once we hit that 180 calendar days of city time, I have 14 days to present that project to the Executive Permitting Committee. And just as a reminder, the Executive Permitting Committee was established within the executive order and is the executive directors of all those departments that were on the previous slide that are a part of the development review process. So Community Planning and Development, Department of Transportation Infrastructure, Public Health and Environment, Parks and Recreation, Denver Fire, HOST, I think I'm missing some others, but just reference that slide. The Executive Permitting Committee will review the findings, determine some next steps, and then a time frame that we then will work with staff and customer to try to resolve the issue. If we do not resolve it within that time frame, then the Denver Permitting Office will initiate a refund of those applicable fees I just talked about if the delay is attributable to our processes, our standards, or requirements. If we exceeded 180 days because our customer redesigned the project two times that triggered, let's say, three additional resubmittals, we would not be refunding fees because the delay was not attributable to the city. So the next requirement of the executive order that we have completed is the interdepartmental escalation policy. So we know this is critical, and we heard quite a bit from our customers that they were often serving as the intermediary, and sometimes you all in your role as well, between departments to try to reach resolution with our customers when there is a conflict between a regulatory requirement or there's a unique issue related to the site that makes it next to impossible for the applicant to comply with the various regulatory requirements between the two agencies. And so we now have this policy that is in place to outline a process to ensure that we are working collaboratively together as one city team with our customer to try to resolve whatever the conflict is and determine a path forward as ideally at the lowest stage possible. So this policy outlines a three-step or three-phase process. Phase one is with staff and supervisors. And then we have time frames associated with each. These are in business days. So we have a business day limit to pull the group together. So phase one is with our staff and supervisors that are involved. It starts when there's a conflict that's been identified, and that could come from our customer or from a staff member who's reviewing and sees something. And ideally, there's some interaction with city staff and the customer to try to figure out resolution. If not, then we engage in this process. So the city team would come together in phase one, understand the issue, discuss amongst it ourselves, and try to come together with some solutions when we meet with the customer. Ideally, the customer then, there's discussion back and forth, we're able to figure out a path forward. That could mean that the applicant may have to, customer has to apply for, let's say, a variance from the zoning regulations, but we would be discussing that collaboratively together, just determining this makes the most sense in an alignment to support the customer through that process. If we're not able to reach resolution in phase one, it then moves to phase two, and that is where the Denver Permitting Office gets involved, as well as our assigned departmental liaisons. So we would review what happened in phase one, understand what some of the issues and challenges were, and then be asking our customer, since they were part of that phase one conversation, to come to the table with other ideas they may have to solve the conflict. We have 15 business days to complete that step in the process. Ideally, we would be issuing a decision, documenting that, and we are done. One caveat here, the executive order and the executive directors wanted to be very clear that if at the end of the day the conflict is due to their charter departmental authority, they wanted to be the ones to weigh in on that. So in phase two, I would determine if that's the case and escalate that item to phase three, which is that executive permitting committee, so the executive directors of the departments, as well as Molly Urbina, Deputy Chief Operating Officer within the mayor's office. If at the end of phase two we reach a decision that is final, there is an appeal process, so within 10 business days, a customer could appeal the decision of the DPO director or an executive director. Let's say it's an issue between Community Planning and Development, Department of Transportation Infrastructure. They could escalate that to phase three at the Executive Permitting Committee. And again, that process then is six business days, and that's from the date of the meeting to issuing a final decision. And that phase three is only, again, brought into play if there's an appeal to the decision or if I determine that it is chartered authority that is at issue. What I think is really critically important here is I can tell you offhand probably 3 to 5 what I hear about as typically being conflicts. I don't have any data to back that up or support that. So anything that goes to phase 2 or phase 3, we will be tracking. So instituting a tracking mechanism and a yearly report out on what the conflicts are, what the cases were, what was decided, so that we can determine, are we continuing to see the same issue over and over? And do we need to have a conversation about fixing whatever that regulatory item is that is continuing to cause conflict? And so I think we heard a lot from our staff that they really want that to happen so that we can stop having some of the same conversations over and over. And I think our customers as well, so that we can resolve the issue as quickly as possible. And I should note really quick, working right now on an update to our denvergov.org DPO landing page to add all these policies and procedures. There'll be a new page that's added that's just Denver Permitting Office information. So it'll talk about key initiatives, policy procedures, and contact information for Denver Permitting Office staff so that all our customers can easily find this. And now I'll turn it over to Robert to talk about the counter operations plan.
Thanks, Joan. We were also charged with developing an operations plan for our public counter when our customers come to the second floor counter where community planning and development is located. We want to ensure our customers have access to the information they need and the people that they need as well. So, but just to highlight a few things, what we found most customers we have found need help with code questions, or clarifications and really understanding some more basic submittal requirements, which I think really just shows a strong demand for that early stage guidance. So really thinking about how we guide our customers through that discovery phase. The top project types we're seeing are single family duplex projects and existing commercial buildings, which aligns well with the permit volume that we're seeing as well. And then we also have access to translation services for our customers through the Propio language services. As far as availability, all development review teams and all call and have on-call staff available Monday through Friday from 8 to 4 p.m. So that was a change. Staff weren't available during those hours, so that's Monday through Friday from 8 to 4, and that's either in person or virtually. So we do have staff who are at the wastewater building or in other non-web locations around the city, so we've set up services for our customers to be able to reach those staff through a Microsoft Teams setup or through Cisco WebEx. And then appointments are still available for our customers as well. Community Planning and Development offers appointments Tuesday and Thursday mornings that our customers can go online and request. Talking back to data again, we're tracking the number of customers, the disciplines requested, and the types of questions that we're receiving. And this data will just help us continue to improve our resources and the information that's available to all of our customers. But outside of code questions, our counter staff also just help direct people around the web building as well. Kind of, where's the bathroom? Where can I get a notary? So they're just great. They provide great customer assistance. And just a few key initiatives underway or upcoming that the Denver Permitting Office is really focused on in partnership with the agencies that Jill mentioned. So first, we've been thinking a lot about our restaurants. You know, restaurants are really the lifeblood of our city and our community. And we're reimagining the permitting process to make it easier to navigate. A few weeks ago, we met as a staff across the city to really reimagine how we could do this, rethink our process, and developed a lot of great ideas. But a couple of those that came out of that was, one is creating a new customer education wizard that guides our applicants step by step through the submittal requirements. So currently working on that, we hope to have something launched by the end of this year as customers are going through that discovery process so they understand what the requirements are before they get into it.
Robert, maybe one thing to add, because I knew I did forget to mention excise and license, and they're obviously a key partner here, particularly with restaurants as well. And so how do we help make sure that our customers are set up for success, whether they're going and they just need a license or they need permitting and a license? And so their partnership is critical here as well. Sorry about that.
Yeah, no, thank you, Joe. There are a lot of front doors that a customer could go to. You know, they could go to excise and licenses to start their business licensing process. They could go to our zoning team to start the zoning process. They could go to our building plan review team to start that process. So we all need to be coordinated and aligned. Wherever our customers is coming to us from, we're able to get them to the right places. So the goal is faster, clearer, and more predictable approvals for our restaurants and small business owners. So we're working to reduce rework through an updated permit review process. When a customer submits a permit application, it goes through a series of different discipline reviews. So we're reviewing our internal workflows to identify and eliminate causes of repeated review cycles to improve that experience for our customers and get them to their permit much faster. So enhancing collaboration between agencies to ensure a smooth review experience for our customers. We're working on developing a guided intake and plan review tool. So developing a tool to help our customers prepare complete code-ready plans before submittal. So working to create a tool that would help them identify any common deficiencies with their plan set before they submit to the city, and that would guarantee a quality submittal for us to review and provide more guidance for our customers up front. And the tool would reduce incomplete applications and improve consistency across our review teams as well. So the next step on that is we'll actually be following up with council members to brief you more on that tool and provide more information. So look out for that from us shortly. So we're also working to improve the comment process as well. When someone submits a permit application, it goes through a series of discipline reviews, and each of those disciplines sends a set of comments to the customer on what they need to change on their plans. So we are working to streamline how comments are written and delivered during the plan review process. So we're focused on clarity, consistency, and solution-oriented feedback to our applicants. And then lastly, we're working to create a new Contact Us page on the Denver Permitting Office landing page to help customers quickly find the right contact for their questions or project. And this will just enhance transparency and reduce response to, delays across departments.
All right, last piece of our update today is related to the Proposition 123 Fast Track process. So I'll kick it off and then turn it over to Emily and Kaylee to share more. So you may remember November of 2022, state passed Proposition 123, which created additional funding streams for affordable housing across the state. Communities have to opt in to the state, and doing so, there's essentially two requirements. One is increasing your baseline supply of affordable housing. So I know Community Planning and Development Host are working together on that. And then the second is to create a fast track approval process for affordable housing. So we in Denver are fortunate. We had, I think also in 2022, launched our Affordable Housing Review Team, or AHART, and so had sort of a step up on this. But moving to a 90-day, which is both city and customer time, it's a pretty aggressive change. We really had to take a step back and look hard at our process. So very thankful to Host. They were able to give us a match to get a grant from the Department of Local Affairs at the end of last year to bring a consultant on board that we worked with to bring our departments together to really understand and develop a process. That we finished that creation earlier this year and are actually right now piloting the process to see how this works. What do we need to change? What do we need to fix? What do we need to look at before we launch next year? Our second re-up for the Prop 123 commitment, I think, has to be in by the end of 2026. And so we have to have the Prop 123 fast track process in place by that time. Our goal is to hopefully launch it in quarter two of next year in advance of that deadline. So with that, I will turn it over. Oh, no, I'm doing the slide. Sorry. So this is a current process map of the site development plan and permitting process for customers that are doing new multifamily, so three units or more. Today's process is kind of disjointed. There's no specific requirements on when specific applications have to be submitted, except that you have to have approval for all of your related applications in order to get your site development plan approved. And so there is repetitive information across multiple documents, and the process is really, as we have learned and talked about, as Chris shared with the concept plan, not necessarily aligned with our customer's design process. And our affordable housing review team has really been successful in our current process, providing additional support. We hadn't changed the process to date. That is now changing as we look to launch the fast track process. So I will turn it over, Kaylee. Okay.
So some of the big ideas that we wanted to really try to solve with the Prop 123 fast track process was, firstly, aligning our entitlement process with the customer's design process. So right now, we may be asking for an application when the applicant maybe doesn't have the money to give us that information, or they don't have the amount of detail they need to actually be able to pursue that application. And so what we did was sit down with our customers and understand, okay, concept drawings, design drawings, construction documents, when are you typically coming in? And we looked at when we're asking for those applications and tried to better align them with what the applicant typically plans for. The other thing we tried to target with this was reducing rework. So really trying to make big decisions a little bit earlier so that when we get into the review process, we're not having to redo the same things over and over if something changes. In addition to that, also reducing duplication and coordination across different applications. So if we're asking for grading here, do we really need that in every single application, or can that just be looked at in one place? In some instances, for some applications that have long lead times, we're also going to be asking the applicant teams to be front-loading their requirements a little bit more. So things that would normally be handled within a review without a timeline that could take a really long time, we're trying to identify those really early so that the applicant can actually resolve some of those issues before they even submit an application. And then the other big piece here was actually assigning the review content to the appropriate review phase for when the applicant has that information as well. So not just timing in terms of where they are in their development schedule, but also making sure that when they're in the design development phase, we're not asking for a construction document level detail. So really trying to align our process more with how prepared the applicant typically is at that time.
So after a lot of work, we have landed on a new process. So the key takeaways here that make it different than what we're doing today are a restructured and very rigorous intake process. One of the key elements of the 90-day fast track is a complete application. And that is when the clock starts and does not stop. It includes weekends, holidays, illness, anything that you can think of. So we have to be ready to review when it comes in. So it's a different and a more enhanced and robust intake that we'll be doing with subject matter experts. And as Kaylee will explain more in the next slide, it's also a three-phase process. So we'll go from that concept, kind of the feasibility due diligence phase, where we're answering those initial design questions. And then we've broken our typical site planning process into two distinct phases, one horizontally focused, like your infrastructure, how the site works together on the ground, and then all of the vertical elements. So again, trying to align that with the customer as well. The other piece of this is a significant change for staff who are involved in the review process. We're calling it an optimized operating model. It's very structured. So we anticipate a deadline for customers to submit. We have a deadline to do the intake and distribute the project. And then there's only about 4 days for staff to review, work together to resolve conflicts, and put together a complete comment response letter that Kaylee would then send out. So it's day by day. We know what we have to do. So we get 5 days in our hands, and then customers get 10 days in their hands, and we figured out how many cycles that we can possibly fit into 90 days. And then when the applications are with the customer, we have also carved out, as part of our operating model, some dedicated time for them to meet with us and, you know, ask those questions as they're doing their redesign so that they can come in with the most complete resubmittal possible, because we don't have time to, well, I need to coordinate with one agency and then a second agency and then try to, maybe we can all talk together. So we've carved out time to do that as part of the process automatically.
And I just adding one more thing to that, I would say we've carved out that time both internally and externally. So we've carved out more collaborative time for staff to actually work through the issues before we issue comments to the applicant, and also just reserving time for the customer when they have questions for us. So this is the new and improved flowchart for the pilot program. So this is broken into three phases. Phase one is feasibility and initial design approvals. Phase two is our horizontal and engineered construction document review. And then phase three is permitting. You'll see in phase one, it has a little squiggly 90 days, which means 90 days may or may not apply to that phase. If in the initial concept plan, we identify that any of the applications in the blue box are required, then 90 days would apply to this phase because those applications are subject to the 90-day requirement. If the application or the project does not need to go through any of those blue applications, then the 90 days does not apply to phase one because concept plans are not subject to the 90-day requirement. The big things that we're sort of trying to do in phase one is really just make sure the applicant understands the process, make sure they understand all the applications they need to do moving forward. In phase one, we are also asking the applicant to sign an affordable housing plan, which locks in their affordability so that we know that they are very serious about pursuing the affordability requirements for this program. So projects have to be 50% affordable to be able to take part in this process, and they are automatically in the fast track process if they meet the affordability criteria. The applicant can only choose to opt out. So we're asking for our applicant teams to lock that affordability in really early so we know how serious they are about doing the process. In phase one, they'll complete all the applications here. One of the other big things that we've done between these phases is also implement a pre-application meeting for each phase, just to make sure that the applicant understands what applications are next, what the application requirements are, especially right now in the pilot program, because it's very different from our normal process, just making sure that we're all on the same page in terms of what is required. Phase two is when we really get into the really technical review of the application, and all of the applications that sort of are outlined and filled in with this like purple color need to be submitted simultaneously. They all have to be complete and routed on the same review timeline. One of the reasons we've grouped things in these phases is because they sort of go best together, but it's also a way to help us try to track one 90-day timeline at a time instead of trying to track 12 90-day timelines at a time, which is sort of what we do now with concurrent review. So phase two is 90 days. Once all applications are complete, it starts that clock. Once staff makes a decision on the application, that 90-day clock ends. One thing we're also hoping to implement with this process are conditions of approval with some of these applications. So it is technically complete, but maybe there's something beyond just the design of the project that needs to occur before we can issue a permit. But this application can be done. So we're trying to shift the place where we make approvals a little bit sooner as well, so that we can move into the next phase and keep the project moving quickly. Once all the applications in phase two are done, then we move into phase three, permitting. Phase three is very similar to what it is now, but again, we're going to be implementing those conditions of approval or technically complete approvals. And the idea here is that we can approve the building permit log. The applicant would then be responsible for resolving any of those conditions of approval, and then we can issue the permit. So we can make the decision and stop the clock. Maybe there's a couple of things that still need to be done to meet all of the city's rules and regulations, but that is done outside of the clock and hopefully on a schedule that makes sense for the applicant when they have funding and those kinds of things. And then just really quickly to what Emily was saying is phase two is this horizontal piece of the review, and phase three would be the vertical and interior portion of the review. So again, sort of trying to do our best to align when with the owner, the developer, and the design teams can all make decisions on those pieces and those scopes of work in terms of the project.
I think that is the end of our slide. So I'll just say, so we're piloting this with, I think, five projects through the end of this year at various phases. We do have a separate but similar process for any single family duplex projects. Typically today, a lot of those are accessory dwelling units that are being permitted by DHA, Denver Housing Authority, with a deed restriction. So a little slightly different. This is really for multifamily. But I think what I'm most excited about is the opportunities to learn from this and see what can we implement in our regular process, potentially without the 90-day clock, but to learn and see how can we improve the process. And again, I think reduce rework and better align with our customers' process and schedule. So with that, we are happy to take any questions.
Great. Thank you for the presentation. It's a lot. And you probably all are very well caffeinated, I imagine. to be able to get through all of that. We're going to go ahead and start with questions. Councilmember Sawyer, you were first.
Oh, okay. Thanks, guys. This was an extraordinary amount of work that you have gotten done in a really short period of time. So congratulations. This is unreal. And I'm sure that there will be some tweaks after you get through the pilot project and all the things. But like, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. So great job.
Thank you.
I have a few questions.
Okay.
So first of all, what happens if the concept changes after the one and done concept? Like, we get developers all the time who are like, we're going to build this, and then they don't. Something totally different goes in that. So like, how does this process manage that?
It's a great question. And I think I sort of think of it as a spectrum of change. There's sometimes that the concept comes in, they get commentary back, the project changes, but not so much that the character of the project is completely different, right? We can deal with that. Move into your formal application, let's keep going. If they come in, say, right, they've walked in, they've said, I want to do a hotel and an office building on this site, and then what they come back with when they want to make a formal application is a bunch of single-family homes, right? Our answer would be, that is a materially different submittal.
Got it.
You're starting over with a new concept, right? This is not fundamentally the same project. There are always iterations in projects as they go through review cycles. We're used to that. But when you are asking fundamentally different questions about what can happen and how it needs to happen on a site, that would just funnel through a brand new project as a brand new concept. Restart the.
Got it. Okay, that's great. And so there's a definition for what is materially different. I don't want us to get sued.
There is nothing black and white, right? Okay. We have that conversation with our applicants in terms of what it is that you're looking at, right? Because there are some times that a project can be very materially different, and yet the underlying questions that needed to be asked are the same.
Okay. That gets real hairy.
Yes, it does.
The lawyer in me is dying inside with that answer right now, just in case you were wondering.
The lucky piece is the concept is a pre-application.
Right.
So it's a free service, it's guidance, it is not a binding approval or a permit approval of anything.
Yeah, no, I think it's just more that like next getting into the SDP step, right? Where it's like, oh, we thought this was very different, and then do they have to go back through or not? So that's great. I really appreciate that. My next question is around Dottie. So the number one concern we hear from developers in our district has nothing to do with CPD and everything to do with Dottie. And so I'm curious how you have been tasked with cutting this process down to 180 days, but Dottie hasn't formally under an executive order been required to do that. And it is the encroachment process that is the biggest problem that we hear about in my council office, which is them, not you.
Right. Well, so Denver Permitting Office, right, not in CPD, Office of the Mayor. So the executive order does apply to those applications. I have to pull it out to see about right-of-way encroachments, but I think our goal is to look at, right, how do we complete the project within that time frame. I'll certainly turn it over to Darian with Dottie, who can speak more, but I think we are all collaborative partners in trying to ensure that our development applications get approved within that 180 calendar days of city time, regardless of whatever or how many different applications are required to get there.
Okay, yeah, so I guess the question is really like, what processes are changing within Dottie to be able to meet these expectations?
Yeah, I'm happy to take that. Darian Mayhorn, Dottie.
You can pull that up.
Okay, Awesome. This is my first time doing this. So they gave me the warning.
We only bite on Wednesdays.
Okay. There's no. Yeah, so Daria Mayhorn, DOTI, Right-of-Way Services Deputy Director. Yeah, happy to be here. Like Jill said, we are working in partnership to meet the expectations of the executive order that really is kind of the mandate for all of us, all of the city agencies that participate in this permitting process. We've made, I would say, some significant kind of procedural changes internally to kind of meet the moment. A lot of it is kind of cultural change. A lot of it is kind of innovations. I think Chris did a good example of talking about an innovation and kind of the one and done concept plan. And we're doing a lot of the same things of listening to our customers, listening to our staff that have a lot of ideas of how we can make improvements. I mean, speaking of encroachments is something that we talked with council about and looking to make some changes to that process, ideally to kind of find some efficiencies while not, you know, incurring any additional risk to either the city or customers. But yeah, I think the point is we are continuously working as partners to just make sure that we are meeting the 180 days. And we've got a lot of different data and tracking systems that the Denver Permanent Office has, as well as us internally within DOTI, to just make sure we're all tracking along in the same direction.
And I would just say, right, we're not going to have necessarily immediate changes overnight, but we are working and continuing to refine and prioritize various process improvements to ensure that we are able to hold ourselves accountable to that 180 calendar day requirement.
Okay, I think that's great. It's just I hate the idea of failing at that 180 days and having to return the fees when, like, because it's just you guys are working so hard and, like, we will get there, just maybe not right this second.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, okay. I really appreciate that. Thank you. Last question. I have so many questions about this. We can definitely talk more. So the other thing we hear in my council office a lot is that it is actually, like, sure, the process is flawed and confusing and a lot of things. And yes, the right-of-way encroachment separate process is a hot mess. But the, like, biggest challenge is actually the cost that our regulations put on the development. Like, for example, developer having to build sidewalks and curb cuts and all the things. And so, like, which is a cost issue specific to them. We especially hear about this, like, up on Colfax where they're trying to adaptively reuse, you know, buildings all the time, and it's really, really frustrating and really, really slow. And so I'm curious how the changes to the creation of the permitting office and the changes that you all are trying to make will, like, is this going to have any positive effect on the regulatory burden side of things as well?
So the executive order does require, I think, both the Denver Permitting Office and Economic Development Opportunity to be involved in any creation of new regulations, to have a frame of really looking at what is the impact to the permitting process. That's sort of DPO's mindset. And then from Economic Development and Opportunity, right, that perspective of the impact to our business community and whatnot. So I think moving forward, right, we're engaged in those conversations and trying to be mindful of not adding more to the process. I think our partners in our departments are also taking a hard look at some of their regulations to see what can be changed, streamlined, simplified. You've probably heard me previously talk about the effort Community Planning and Development is engaged in related to the zoning code and urban design standards and guidelines, with a report coming out at the end of this year. Our partners in DOTI are looking at their wastewater standards. I'm sure there's others that I just can't think of off the top of my head, but I think we are all very mindful of the impact of our regulatory requirements and but also the goals we want to achieve as a city, right? So there is a balance there, and how do we strike that balance is not an easy decision to make. But I think, again, we are focused on, in the Denver Permitting Office, trying to make the permitting process as smooth, easy, efficient as possible. And that does mean understanding what are the regulatory impacts and requirements that go along with that, and working with our partners to try to help address issues when they arise.
Got it. Okay. Can I ask one more?
Yes, one more.
Okay. Question for you about, like, the single family permitting issue, because that is different from formerly Chris's side of things. Now, right, the permitting office as a whole. So when we're talking about multi-unit developments, it's there is one very unique but structured right. process. When we're talking about single family homes, there are significant permitting challenges on that side that we don't hear about as often. Mm-hmm. But what it has done is incentivize people to just not apply for a permit when they're doing something. So I'm just curious, maybe it's from CPD's perspective, like how do we manage that side mm-hmm. of things when we're just talking about, one home that's being built that is, we contracted it out for a while, we had a whole separate group for a while, like.
So the permit review work that Robert mentioned is underway is looking at, outside of the site development plan process, any type of project that's applying for a building or zoning permit, and how do we improve that process to improve collaboration and reduce rework. So single family and duplex projects are a part of that. As part of that effort, we just completed four different after action reviews. So we looked at two commercial and two single family duplex projects to really dive in after they were completed, what went well, what didn't, what are lessons that we learned, and we brought that to our work in looking at our permit review process. We are right now in the phase of sort of analyzing the feedback we've gotten from our staff to not yet at a point where we're making recommendations and would be working with our customers to get feedback on that before we did make any changes. Mm-hmm. But I think we're across the board looking at our processes and how do we improve that and improve collaboration. So let's say you are building a single family home and you're told you need to dedicate right of way, which impacts your zone lots and then your zoning permit. We're talking about like how do we get information about out there so our customers might know ahead of time, oh, I'm adding density here. What's my alley width? Maybe I will need to dedicate property to widen the alley. How do we let our customers know that before they've actually spent money designing a project and making a submittal to us? So all those things are on the table to, again, I think really arm our customers with the information they need to get through the process as quickly as possible and improve that collaboration. So if you've got some specific issues or examples you'd like to talk through, happy to set some time to dive into those details. And obviously Eric Browning is here from Community Planning Development on the building permitting side. If there's anything, Eric, you want to add.
Thank you, Eric Browning, Community Planning and Development, Chief Building Official. In addition to agreeing with the feedback that Jill provided, with respect to understanding your question was maybe on new development, new single family homes, we are also making significant strides in terms of our processes and our permitting with respect to modifications, alterations, renovations, updates to those single family and duplex type projects as well, so that we're not in fact disincentivizing our owners from coming in and getting the appropriate permits. And we're doing that by simplifying processes. We're doing that by making the permits in some cases instantaneously available to achieve. And we're making sure that we're communicating with our customers in different ways and getting out in the field through our inspectors early in these projects so that we can help support them as they go through construction once they do have these permits and get back in their home or get those portions of their home opened up as quickly as possible.
One example just to highlight really quick. So you heard us talk last year probably about approval with conditions for interior remodels for single family duplex projects. So that's been in place, gosh, maybe almost a year now. And Robert is now working with the team to actually make that an online permit that doesn't have to go through plan review at all to really simplify that process, make it easier to get permits. And Robert, when are we hoping to get that launched? Maybe early next year?
Yeah, so that's an effort to provide permits without a review that are a single family duplex interior only. So someone's remodeling a kitchen or a bathroom or something and they go through our permit review process today, we would instead issue what we call a quick permit, just like folks do with a trade permit, or contractors do with the trade permits, where they issue a water heater permit or a roof permit or a siding permit or something like that. It'd be much, it's very similar to that. We would ask a set of eligibility questions to make sure they're eligible for that and that doesn't actually require a review. Assuming mm-hmm. they get through that eligibility and all is good, then we'll issue the permit. And we'll schedule a pre-inspection meeting with the customer. So they go out and meet with one of our inspectors just to make sure that they understand the scope of the project and everything still looks good. Then they proceed to construction, then we'll follow up with the final inspection and approve their and file their permit. So we're hoping to have that launched by the end of this year. We're working with our technology services group right now to develop that in our Acela platform and are finalizing the requirements with our teams. We'll start development and hope to have it launched by end of this year.
Awesome. Okay, that's great. I think I was more asking about scrapes, which is what we see all the time, right?
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more involved than just like the interior kitchen remodel
for
or whatever,
sure.
But like is or additions.
Yeah.
It's still that has to go through site review, but
yeah. I think the good news, our turnaround time on single family duplex review projects has decreased substantially since 2023,
mm-hmm.
and we're continuing to see that decrease.
Mm-hmm.
And then through our efforts to ideally improve collaboration across teams, that should also ideally simplify the process.
Right.
Yeah, and we do track possession time with this. So the time that the review is in our hands with the city, and for single family duplex review, we've improved by 66 days. Since 2023, so a major improvement, and working to continue to improve and not stop.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. That was actually very helpful because I'm gonna need a new boiler and a water heater personally.
Right, yes.
That's what I'm like. Okay, now I know the process. Thank you. That was very informative.
Reach out and I can walk you through it.
Thank you very much. Next we have Council Member Alvidres.
Thank you, Committee Chair. It's evident that CPD and DPO are showing how they're thinking about this citywide and as an operation, not as like a department service. And I think that's an exciting shift. Something I'd like to know and see data, because I'm sure you probably don't have data yet on, is like how many refunds are we giving out? None yet. Okay.
Yeah.
And then kind of had a similar question to Councilwoman Sawyer, because I think Prop 123 wasn't obviously just about speed, and I know that's like your wheelhouse, and I think there is like a disconnect I'm hearing with like maybe hosts needing to be at the table as well, because I am curious how equity is involved in this, because I didn't see that in any of the slides. And when we talk about affordability, that isn't the only goal. It's also maintaining home ownership preservation and reduce displacement from our city. We're seeing a lower and lower number of people of color in our city, and that's very concerning to me. And so I think that goes to those single family homes where what I'm hearing from my constituents is like, grandma passes away, now I get the home, I can't figure out how to get through permitting to make it usable to me, or grandma's moving in, I need to build an ADU, it takes so long. Mm-hmm. And so I would like to see that, a little bit more information on that side, because I think these for-profit affordable housing developers are figuring it out, because I'm seeing them get through the process now, which is great. That means we're making progress. But where I'm still hearing frustration is those local owners. And it's not just for my residents anyway, it's not a lot of scrapes, but it's more like adding on to these tiny little bungalows that have been in their house in their family for generations. One thing host mentioned in their briefing for the budget was that there is a prioritization that they're looking at. So long-term residents or legacy residents having some kind of prioritization. And I think when we're talking about displacement, that is part of that. And I'm curious, has there been any conversations around that?
So I think one tool that we are working on that we hope will help is a permitting wizard for single family duplex projects and work to give our homeowners a better sense of what's needed and get that from the start from a citywide perspective. So I think there has been, you know, some good strides made in improving our communication and materials, but right, you have to go to a 30-page guide and kind of understand all of that. So this wizard that Robert can certainly share more about that we're working on, we hope will help. I think from, you know, our perspective, we want to make it easy to remodel your home, to add an addition if you need to. And so that's, I think, getting out communication and clarity for our customers and having that available, having staff available, right, to answer questions. So Robert mentioned the Contact Us page. It is difficult today to find contact information on the city website for the various people that are involved. And so our vision, which we hope to have completed by this year, is, hey, you know who you want to call, great, staff directory. If you have like a sense of who you want to talk to about something, but you don't know where to start, here's where to start. Is it a message? Do you leave a message? Is it answered live and what hours? And then can you make an appointment with that person or team to talk to them? So it's all in one place and much easier for our customers to navigate, because I think that's some of a lot of what we hear is that navigation and understanding all the pieces and parts is what's incredibly difficult. So I think that's really our focus, is try to make that process easier. Robert mentioned, you know, the language services we have available at the counter so that we can make sure we serve all of our customers regardless of language. And then Laya Mitchell's with Host in the audience if you want to add anything on the Host efforts.
Hi everyone, I'm Laya Mitchell from the Department of Housing Stability. I can give an update on the prioritization policy, if that was part of the question. I know there's a preservation and anti-displacement. Yeah.
How does that, you know, correlate with this? Prioritization with Prop 123 funding or a permitting process?
So I think related to Prop 123, right, we're...
Is that solely like huge, large development?
No, absolutely. It's also single family and duplex projects. So I think... apologies if I did not mention, right, the ADU program that Denver Housing Authority does, that has all been qualified to date for the Affordable Housing Review Team. We expect that will continue in proposition. No, I know, yeah. But just that, but they are helping homeowners, you know, try to stay in their homes. I think if the property is restricted in some way and we can confirm that as affordable, that is typically what applies and is eligible for our Affordable Housing Review Team. We are still working through, actually, with Host, the eligibility criteria for Proposition 123. So certainly your feedback is well taken in terms of if it's staying, you know, and supporting existing residents, how might that be considered? I think we're open to having that conversation.
Great. Okay. That's great. I did have one more question / concern, and it's specifically about talking about how quickly we're turning things around, which that's a good-ish metric, but I don't like that metric, because what matters to me is how many times are we pushing it out? Because I personally have had my experiences with CPD, and you're paying your life savings and the home equity line that you're able to get, and every time you get a kickback from CPD, because all of a sudden you're finding out that you're going to have to put 25 foot deep caissons because of the lot line or something, it's can change your project from happening to not happening, and you're 60, 50K already in architect or engineering fees. And so appreciate the turnaround time, but more important to me is how many times are we turning that around?
Yeah, equally concerned with that. Absolutely, we do track the number of cycles it takes to get to approval. So is it taking 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times to get to a final approval, and how many back and forths are we going with the customer? We mentioned one of the initiatives earlier around the permit review process and workflow. That whole initiative is an effort to ensure all our disciplines are collaborating. So we ensure there isn't as much back and forth. So we can reduce review cycles and make sure we're giving the customer all the accurate information all at once from every different discipline. So that way our wastewater team isn't providing conflicting information as our plumbing team. They're coordinated, they're collaborating on those reviews together. We're still working on that, as Jill mentioned, but that is an effort to try to get at what I think you're speaking to, Councilwoman.
Great, I appreciate that. And lastly, I'll just wrap up with a comment around, like, we want our city to be welcoming to families, and this is a big part of that. And so excited for the work, but know we have a long way to go, because I continuously hear young people moving out of our city because their houses just aren't meeting their needs. And so I want to elevate that as part of it. So thank you. Thank you, Committee Chair.
Thank you, Council President Sandoval.
Thank you. Thank you all for all the work. How fast do the Prop 123 dollars come in?
From the state. So the way, as I understand it, and see if Lyon knows as well, projects apply. So if the community has opted in to Prop 123, it makes sort of projects eligible to apply for the various pools of money that the state has related to Prop 123. So we, the city, do not control that. It's allowing applicants to apply for that funding at the state.
Yeah, the money doesn't actually come to the city.
I get that. Let me phrase it another way.
how long is it taking for the applicants to pull down the money? Because so it's all correlated, mm-hmm. right? So at least in, for me, I believe it's correlated. Yeah. So if we have this phenomenal review time, which you all have done, and you're all looking at how to do this 90-day review, and they're not getting the money, it's really hard on our processes. Mm-hmm. Like, it just does. Mm-hmm. And so I have heard from my own, just people coming to me, that it's really cumbersome to get, even though we've opted in, there's not a clear path forward. And I feel like we're doing a really good job creating a clear path, mm-hmm. but that has to be married at the state side. And so who are our partners on the state side so that they understand that you're doing all of this really good work so that they can pull that money down? Because if you don't, it stalls the project, and then that stalled project leads to more payment on interest, mm-hmm. longer payment times, which doesn't get us to the point. It's put right. us in affordable housing crunch still. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, my anecdotal experience with the affordable housing review team projects is that once they have a permit or a permit ready letter, they close within days, weeks. And so that once they've closed on their financing is when they get the money. And so if we can shorten when they can apply for money, get an award for money, to actually closing on that money, which is what this process is doing, hopefully it shortens and reduces those holding costs, so that from application for funding to when they have a permit and can actually close on that funding becomes a lot smaller. And it also makes... having a process like this also can potentially make a project more competitive in those financial applications as well.
And DOLA, Department of Local Affairs, is who we are coordinating with most closely, so we can certainly reach out to them and ask what's happening as it relates to the Prop 123 funding.
Yeah, and then the equity, the Prop 123 equity funding, and then there's a Prop 123 debt rounds. And, you know, I think as our affordable housing developers are moving forward with the, you know, site development and permitting process, they're also working on securing the financing, like, as you're noting. You know, they're kind of, they need to be doing those two processes parallel so that they can close. Mm-hmm. And Host has been working with both CHAFA and DOLA on our applications so that we can share information or have better alignment, so that projects can, you know, they're very competitive. We're having, you know, every round there are really great projects that aren't receiving funding through the Prop 123. So anything we can continue to work on to just align both our permitting review process and the same thing happens with the low-income housing tax credits, you know, like the timing of the financing. And then I think for the most part, you're not moving them through the process until they have that, like an award letter.
Yeah, so for Prop 123 specifically, we do have built sort of into the flowchart that we don't necessarily want them to proceed to phase two until they have until they've been funded or they're ready to proceed at risk, because this process really can't work until they can actually make decisions on a project, which means they actually have the money to make decisions on a project. Right now, in the affordable housing review team world, they kind of proceed at risk or wait for funding. It's sort of the same, but the time horizon is much different because it takes a long time to get funded right now. So sometimes we'll have an application just kind of hanging out in our process, you know, applying when they can, just because they want to keep their application active while they're still applying for funding to CHAFA or other funding sources.
Yeah, and I think Prop 123 has given us some new funding sources for affordable housing, which is great, but it has sort of added to the complexity of the capital stack that developers are pulling together in order to, like, make a successful project.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So with that comment, I think that oftentimes we think we will think about Prop 123 as, like what you just said, for affordable housing developers. I don't want that just to be affordable housing developers. To do an ADU, it's so process heavy that unless you're part of the West Renaissance Collaborative, you're not going to go towards Prop 123 dollars because you don't know about them. But you could do it. You really could. You could get a stack and be able to, I could build one in my house right now, go in, deed restrict it at 80%, rent it at 80%, and get that. But oftentimes I feel like we build these systems for what you just named the affordable housing developers. Mm-hmm. And I don't want this just to be the system for affordable housing developers, mm-hmm. because in reality, there's just not that many of them in Denver. There's a handful, maybe a dozen, maybe. And outside that dozen is the other realm of the development community, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I would love to do is figure out how we thread a needle through all of these and bring in the development community outside the affordable housing developers, mm-hmm. so that we're teaching all of them of all these different tools that we have in our toolbox, because they just don't, once you get so well, once you get comfortable in a performa, you just stick with that, right? Because it's easy, it's predictable. Everyone always says that one thing you want to hear from a developer is they want predictability. So they don't like to go through rezonings. They don't even like to go to the Board of Adjustment. Yeah. They want predictability. And so what we do is we have these other developers, let's say the affordable housing subset, they don't live in predictability. They live in their value of wanting to bring in affordable housing, right? It's like more mission driven. Mm-hmm. Whereas I would love to get to the other development community and have them because there are developers out there who really do want to build affordable housing. They just mm-hmm. don't know how to do it,
right?
Because it's not predictable and they feel like these systems aren't made for them. Mm-hmm. They're made for the groups of people who are doing the affordable housing. And that's why I started out with the question, mm-hmm. is how easy is it to get the dollars? Because some will say, yeah, I'll want to go, and I know two developers off the top of my head who have gone in for Prop 123 dollars. You didn't have this system in yet, so they totally just got overlooked. They didn't know how competitive it was. Mm-hmm. They didn't know that they were going to have to be awarded with all of these things. And so it's really taking people and putting them in very uncomfortable positions in this realm. But if we're really going to make a dent on our affordable housing crisis that we have in Denver, how do we... have we ever done a sit down with all of these people who are building in Denver and say, hey, here's our systems, here's what we have, because it's really, I feel like I want the affordable housing developers to have access to this. I really do. And mm-hmm. we have to get out of this crisis or else we won't. So we have to be able to have these tools for all people. And to some of the points, single family housing, but it's such bureaucracy that people are just like, I don't want to do that. I'm going to just do with what I know. I'm going to do what's comfortable in my performance. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would just add one, absolutely. And I think, part of the Prop 123, the equity products in particular are aimed at sort of middle income. And we also have the middle income tax credits coming, that are sort of widening the amount of projects that qualify for these kind of state funding sources. And the Prop 123 fast track process allows projects that are 50% affordable. So there is a little bit of that mixed income model that I think we can continue to kind of foster so that it's not all 100% deed restricted affordable projects or nothing, so that we're kind of fostering those sort of mixed income projects or kind of mixed ones using mixed financing, which is trickier, but it does get to a more economically diverse landscape of housing.
But I think, based on your feedback, I don't know that we have really on the city page anywhere sort of a Prop 123 information about really how does all this work. And maybe that's something we can work on sort of building and kind of filling in that knowledge gap. And then I'll just add, I think a key initiative that I'm really hoping to pursue starting next year are really creating some educational forum opportunities. Yeah. So focused around sort of the single family duplex customer, existing building commercial project, and then the brand new. It's something we kind of CPD started pre-COVID. It's kind of stopped a little bit. And I think taking that holistic perspective across the development process, we can have some real success in getting out and talking to our customers in advance of them doing a project, helping educate, inform, and breaking down some of those barriers. So that regardless of if you've done this before or not, you can have an understanding of what's needed and how to be successful.
I love that idea of having a how-to Prop 123 page, because I have mm-hmm. looked for one and there isn't one. And so I've kind of written up my own I don't know what I don't know, right? I'm like, oh, here's what I know from just all these digging around. But also love having those forums, Jill, because I think that that's where you – if you bring people together and all these different ideas, and then they start sharing ideas amongst each other, that's where you're going to get the real synergy of being able to come up with different ideas. Mm-hmm. And because what we're doing is you all want this to be successful. Right. You're saying, hey, here's another opportunity to go into your capital stack.
Right.
But it's super complicated at the same time. Yes. And so mm-hmm. I've learned that people tend to stay away from complicated things that are more complicated that I don't know, that I don't feel comfortable in. And I'm like, oh, so why would anyone else do that? But if we really want to get out of this affordable housing crisis, we're going to have to figure out how to create that synergy around all of the players at the table. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I have a question that's somewhat related to that. I was taking a tour of a new affordable conversion project in the district, in District 4, and it was taking a hotel a hotel, and moving it into affordable housing. And maybe they were just a one-off, or one of the things that they had talked about was just the length of time that it took them to get through the permitting process. It wasn't clear what direction they needed to go. There were requirements with fire and CPD, et cetera. And so I don't know if that was because they just happened to hit it at the time when a lot of things are going on. But just knowing that, I think this wasn't their first rodeo for doing a conversion, but it seemed like a newer process.
So maybe offline, you could share with me sort of the address or project number. That might be a great project for us to dive into some details and do an after action review to sort of learn what happened. Obviously, we have a big focus on adaptive reuse, and how do we make sure we're supporting our customers who want to keep those buildings. There's a lot of obviously embodied carbon and energy, and mm-hmm. and as much as we can help support that reuse, we should. And so I'd love to maybe talk offline and get that so we can dive in and figure out what can we improve.
Yeah, that would be great if we could. Because it was, I mean, I think a great concept, and what they were doing was exciting. Mm-hmm. I have a question that goes back to the budget hearings last week. When CPD was presenting, I had asked a question around, like, where does this office sit? How does it look? And I'm not sure from all the, you know, you had a lot of flow charts, but where does this kind of fit into the org chart? And I heard you say this isn't part of CPD, this is in the mayor's office, but I don't think we have any budget around, you know, this work right now for the Denver Permitting Office. And then what the question or some of the comments that they had is, we're just pulling people together from different areas, but it's like, how do we get a full picture of what this permitting office looks mm-hmm. like and is?
Sure. So there are three staff within the Denver Permitting Office. So myself as the director, Robert, and our colleague Matt. So we are an office within the mayor's office. Our staff, our three, you know, full-time staff, are part of DPR and CPD's personnel budget as it stands right now. We have been working and have a draft of sort of a DPO organizational chart, sort of from each of the departments. We're working to get that updated and in a format that it's very tiny right now, so it's kind of hard to use it. So happy to, I think maybe that would help answer your question, but obviously we work in partnership with all of our departments involved in the permitting process, but yeah, have been trying to build out that sort of view of what is the DPO, because it's obviously greater than just three of us.
Okay.
That's so I can follow up with you once we have
we
that
can
finalized.
Follow up about that too.
Yeah.
I had also seen in the budget that there was an elimination of an AHART position, but I don't think it was filled. And so what impact does that have on, you know, Prop 123 and being able to expedite that?
Yeah, that position within AHART was one that we were actually accommodating all of their responsibilities across other positions that made more sense to handle that for both review and administrative capacities. So the elimination of that position didn't impact our ability or our capacity during that. So that was a strategic elimination.
Okay. Thank you. And then...
In the presentation, again, the time to turn around, and we've got the 180 days. You had the chart with the 90 days, 90 days, 90 days, and so forth. Is there any thought or is there a process that would be outward facing or for public to be able to monitor and track where their permits are, where they are in the process, and something that's external?
So today, one can go into our e-permit system to sort of pull up their applications, yeah. See where they're at. It is not the most easiest or user-friendly interface. We are working with some partners to try to figure out, is there a better way to kind of see that? Related to the 180 calendar days, we are talking about how could we make something externally visible that you can put in your project number and see what is the total city time, what is customer time, so that's more easily identifiable. So yes, I don't think we have an easy solution yet to either of those, but those are definitely key priorities for us.
Yeah, I just keep thinking, like, again, sounds like a good idea, but I just don't know exactly how it all rolls into, you know, that accountability side. And if we're putting it out there, how are we making sure that the public is able to, you know, monitor and see their process going through? And then for other permit pieces or processes that we have for like ADA compliance, like, how does that circle back? Do they, like, if it was going through HRCP and they're doing ADA compliance, does that go back through HRCP or does that come to you? And is there efforts to pull in what those compliance pieces are?
I'll turn that over to Eric Browning.
Thank you, Eric Browning, Chief Building Official, Community Planning and Development. So within CPD, we have team members that are responsible for ensuring accessibility compliance, both for private development and for our own city or other public buildings. And at this time, that lives within CPD's breadth of responsibility. So hopefully that helps.
It does. That's helpful. I think it's just, it's one of those where you have multiple things that are happening and multiple moving parts. And I didn't know if that was also in your scope of kind of pulling it all under one roof.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a review as part of the process, whether it's a site development plan or building permit, yes, that all is factored in under the umbrella of the Denver Permitting Office.
I think tremendous work that you have done and being able to do the coordination and to think about this in a new way. So I just appreciate you taking the time. I will have to say some of the process lines and charts that you've shown, I think exemplifies the complexity of, it's probably better than maybe it was, you know, what the chart might've looked like 6 months ago. But I just appreciate that you are pulling it together and having one shot clock for those 90 days. That makes a lot of sense. And if that wasn't happening before, I'm glad it's happening now. But I just wanted to thank you all for coming today. I don't have any other questions. Did you want to hop back in the queue? Okay. We don't have any action items. Thank you again for coming. We have 5 items on consent, and I don't believe we have anybody that's going to pull them up. Great. So thank you.
Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
We are adjourned. Officially.